This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to the Weekly Hotwire. Back in November 2022, New Zealand agriculture was already starting to feel the pressure of a changing policy landscape. Emissions pricing, forestry investment, and the economics of carbon were no longer theoretical debates. They were beginning to influence real land use decisions and real rural livelihoods. At the time, Labor was in government. The next election was on the horizon, and the sector was grappling with what agricultural emissions pricing might look like and how the emissions trading scheme would shape the future of farming. In this episode, we're revisiting two conversations recorded during that period. First, then Agriculture Minister Damien O'Connor explaining the government's thinking around emissions policy and land use signals. And second, National's agriculture spokesperson Todd Muller outlining where the opposition believed the settings were wrong and what they thought should change. Listening back now, these interviews capture a moment when the direction of New Zealand's climate and land use policy was still being contested, and they offer useful context for the debates we're still having today. Let's step back to November 2022 with a question to then Agriculture Minister Damien O'Connor. With the impact of afforestation and agricultural emissions pricing essentially falling heavily on sheep and beef farmers, there is a feeling from many farmers that they are the sacrificial lamb. Have you got anything to say to farmers on that?
Look, I mean, it's a kind of a crazy statement around sacrificial lamb. Look, we've all been trying to work through this, as I say, for 25 years. And He Waka was the industry's proposal. You know, that is that we gave industry leaders a couple of years to work through. They went out and consulted widely with farmers and got the feedback. There was talk of a, you know, processor levy and then back to a farmer levy. And so, you know, things were kicked around and pretty robustly debated. And so we got He Waka's proposal, went through it, looked at some areas where clearly around pricing and around that issue of scientific proof of sequestration, we still had not resolved. That's where you will see questions in the consultation document, because those things have yet to be finalised. But clearly, given our international obligations, governments ultimately are responsible for the liability. And we just have to ensure that our domestic system of you know, encouraging emissions reduction, you know, is fair. But ultimately, it's working. And I guess that's where the price setting is really important. We need to know that it's a sufficient incentive to encourage people to take up the technologies that and mitigations that might and will become available.
It appears the government has been slow to put meaningful limits on forestry offsetting, and the Climate Change Commission is already saying too much is already happening. And of course, we are the only ones to allow 100% forestry offsetting in our ETS. What's going on there?
Yeah, look, I don't think any of us are comfortable with all of that forestry planting. And I've gone back and had a look at, you know, some of the figures that we had over the last three decades, in effect. And, you know, sheep and beef area, we've had a 12% reduction from 1990 to 2000, a 13% reduction in the next decade, and a 15% reduction. We've had land use change across our country for a long time, and we're still at a lower level of afforestation than we had in the peak of the late 1990s. And so we just have to keep that in mind. And we intervening on farmers' right to sell land to who they like, this is to Kiwis, is something that any government's reluctant to do. And, you know, if we were to directly intervene, and we'd be trying to find the right balance between clearly the signals that are necessary, but not overimposing on farmers' rights to sell. And it's not been government selling, remember. These are farmers selling their properties and to people who want to put them in trees. And these are Kiwis who want to put them in trees. And now the ETS is something that, you know, that was something that farmers actually asked for, or they didn't want a tax in the early 2000s, a carbon tax. And so ETS has been endorsed by both governments, National and Labor, as the best way forward. Now, it is complex. And it does have variable, you know, carbon price. And at the moment, you know, it's high. And some people are speculating on that. And that's why they're planting trees. Kind of normal commercial behavior. You know, and there are lots of things that happen in our economy that we're not comfortable with. But, you know, governments don't intervene unnecessarily.
Sure. If it's all about emissions reduction, of course, why are we allowing big emitters to essentially plant forests, lock them up and walk away? Isn't that essentially just dumping pollution on farms?
Well, that's, you know, that's in part true. And I guess that some of them have no option. Say the aviation industry at the moment, there's talk of, you know, some biofuels, but, you know, probably a wee way off. And so for some like that, where there are no other options, that's all they can do. And I guess if you come back into the farm system, that's why, you know, there's 95% discount on emissions charging, because we don't have, you know, an ability to switch biological systems overnight, but there are emerging technologies. And so the levy and the money gained from the system we're proposing will all go back into agriculture to help speed up, you know, that research and development. And there are some really exciting projects. I visited one in Boston with a joint venture with Fonterra. And so there's a lot going on around the world. And I've just come from a conference where food security, you know, very important issue, but right alongside that was emissions reduction, and because climate change is affecting how we produce our food. And unless we can reduce the increasing impacts of climate change, these events are happening more frequently around the world. Unless we can do something to reduce that, you know, we will have less food security into the future.
You're certainly right on food security. Do you think you're getting the balance right in that area? Because, of course, food production is an ever-increasing resource that is needed and a significant earner for this country. Farmers feel they are celebrated on one hand, especially through the pandemic, for the good work they're doing, and on the other, persecuted and lost through constant change in the policy goalposts. Have you got any nuggets of gold or something you can give to farmers today to reassure them that the government is prepared to continue working with them for better outcomes?
Look, we have been, and, you know, people who use the word persecuted don't help. You know, we've been working through these challenges. The Clean Streams Accord, if you look at water quality, goes way back, you know, quite some time. Mm. And yet there were still areas that, you know, we had some problems, and we saw the pictures of winter grazing in some areas where, you know, it was just abhorrent. And those images don't serve us well. And so we had to move to try and make sure that doesn't continue. And in this last winter, you know, wet winter, there's been an amazing improvement, and everyone has to be complimented for what will be a challenging time. So we can do it if we really try hard. You come back to, of course, we've acknowledged and supported the farmers, you know, in many, many ways. EFFF, you know, working on Opportunity Grows Here, helping people skills, changing the training system, you know, for people so that they can get all the skills, whether it be shearing or other things in agriculture. We've been working and acknowledging that, but we can't stand still. And some of these issues have been around. The emissions one for 25 years, people have sat on their hands, and it's made it harder because time has moved on. You know, we've seen the impacts of climate change, even here in New Zealand. Droughts on the West Coast, we've got floods, you know, in places we've never seen them. We can't bury our heads in the sand, and we've been trying to work with the farmers. He Waka Eke Ngau was the industry's, you know, consultation and development proposal around the best solution here. It wasn't governments, and we're simply responding and tidying up basically their proposal.
Do you think there's an element that you know, some are saying, well, farmers need to actually be brought into the 21st century and catch up with other industry? Is there an element to your thinking along those lines?
Well, I just want to make sure there's a good, sustainable, viable, profitable future for farmers. And you know, that's future generations. And, you know, that's why we're making changes to the dairy legislation to ensure that Fonterra, as our biggest dairy company, you know, has a viable future so that the milk can be taken from farmers and they make good profits into the future. We've been doing all of these things to try and make sure there's a good future. You know, some people are arguing, you know, for a better present, and, you know, that's great, but it can't be at the expense of the future, because, you know, without, you know, the system, the infrastructure and the right settings for a better future, we won't be able to encourage people into agriculture, and we need to. And one of the challenges has been, you know, it's getting harder for people to buy land, younger people, And whether that's discouraging them from coming in early on, I don't know. Those are one of the discussions that we have across the sector all the time. And we see more amalgamation of farms, and that's good from an efficiency perspective, but it does mean there are less opportunities for young farmers to come into smaller blocks and work their way up. And
yeah, well, I guess if you've got an airline buying up 20,000 hectares to plant pine trees and leave it, which certainly outstrips sheep and beef returns, how on earth can a young couple get a look in there?
Yeah, I agree, you know, and so who's been selling to the airline? You know, that's the question, isn't it?
Yeah, but of course, I guess that comes around the settings, right? Settings in the ETS in order for that to happen.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And, you know, the ETS wasn't my preferred option, but farmers rejected the alternative. And you know, the ETS is now in place. And so we have to work with that. And we're trying to ensure that the settings, you know, don't skew land use decisions. But it's really hard to intervene and say to a New Zealander who's selling, do not sell to the other New Zealander because we think it should stay in a sheep and beef farm. I've been putting a lot of effort and we put a lot of money into the wool industry to try and, you know, to supplement the income for sheep farmers because, you know, it's been costing them and it's just been a ridiculous situation. Farmers voted down the wool levy. You know, that's meant that there hasn't been enough focus on the opportunities in wool. We're trying to restart that. There's a lot of stuff that we've been doing to try and boost the incomes and the sustainability now and into the future, you know, for all farmers.
Do you think there's a future for coarse wool?
Yes, absolutely do. Absolutely. You know, look, it's a renewable, biodegradable product that has multiple uses. People think, you know, it can just be put into carpet. And unfortunately, we haven't been kind of lifting our sights and our mind to all those potential uses. There's been a lot of work going on. Some of it's ready for development, and that's what we're supporting.
Does the government use New Zealand coarse wool in carpet and insulation in New Zealand housing?
No, I don't know. We don't specify what they should or shouldn't. We've left that up to, you know, to some of the government agencies. We're certainly ensuring that they have more sustainable and systems, life cycle system analysis of that. Some is going in, not enough in my view. And I think that's another thing. That's where the wool industry has to get alongside all those companies, whether they be private or government sector, that are building houses and ensure that they can use wool.
So what was National's position at the time? Here is Todd Muller's view from November 2022 as they moved into election phase. Now, the government have reduced the coverage of sequestration in their proposal or response to Hiwaki Kanoa's proposal. Also, their own modelling shows a potential reduction in the sheep and beef sector as a result of afforestation and agricultural pricing. What do you think of the government's response?
Well, we've been very critical of it. I can't really understand what they're thinking. Frankly, you have the sector round a table in support often by government officials to work through how the Iwaki Kanoa proposal could work, right? Clearly putting agriculture into the ETS doesn't work. We've been strongly opposed to that since day one. But another model, which is perhaps, you know, levy-based, that assists in the building of, you know, the capacity for farmers to measure on farm and then obviously investment into innovation and tools to be able to do something about it. That makes sense. And clearly part of that balance needs to be that if you can demonstrate you've got, coverage, you know, plant, trees, you name it, that can sequester carbon and you can demonstrate that, then you should be able to count it. That should be a point of principle, Angus. And the fact that the government has rejected that, thrown it back really into the industry's face, I just wonder what went wrong around the cabinet table, because one assumes O'Connor got the importance of that. Maybe it was Parker, who seems to have always had a thing against the ag sector going back 20 years. Maybe it was him, but either way, the government's produced something which is completely unworkable, doesn't count the positive sequestration that occurs on farm, and then wants to frame the price as a punitive tax as opposed to a partnership levy. And that is the distinction, really, between what we would do and what these guys have done.
So you're saying a national government would make changes in those areas, particularly around the accurate and the recognition of total on-farm sequestration, because farmers really need to know these things.
Yeah, and you know, I have certainly made that point in the couple of 3 weeks that I've got this acting ag role. That's exactly what we'd do. We would what the industry landed, we think, is in terms of the proposal is the right area. You know, you're always working with the sector, find areas to further enhance and polish. That's just the nature of it. Mm. One of the areas I think is there needs to be a hell of a lot of focus on creating the conditions and regulations for new technologies to be tested on farm. Mm. How is it that we have compounds that are treated as you know, good feed supplements that support methane reduction in some countries, but over here it's got to be treated like a medicine and take years to be proven. I mean, we're just too slow and too lethargic in partnering with New Zealand and global innovators to come up with solutions. So I would get that as part of it. But that's more about building on the partnership, Angus, as opposed to, you know, the specific plan. The sector came up with one, we'd back it.
Yep. Okay. So you'd back it. That's good. Because the impact of afforestation and agricultural emissions pricing, well, this is falling heavily on sheep and beef farmers. And of course, there is a feeling that they are the sacrificial lamb, like they always tend to feel like with these constant policy changes. Is there a message you have for farmers today?
I can understand why, particularly when the government's analysis in their own recommendations back to the sector says, well, you know, we're going to lose a fifth of sheep and beef country. I mean, that is ridiculous. It is ridiculous on a number of fronts. One, global population going up. Two, middle class burgeoning. Three, animal protein still valued and will continue to be valued by that same middle class. Four, we're the best at it in terms of emissions per kilo produced. You know, what on earth are we doing creating a punitive framework that essentially, you know, taxes a fifth of sheep and beef out of existence? It's just, it's hopeless, frankly. I just think that they've got it round the wrong way. So I can absolutely understand why they feel so frustrated. And I think the broader question around the ETS and its current operation, I think, does need further considered reflection. Because okay. At $90 a tonne or whatever it is at the moment, you know, Air New Zealand and Z Energy and all the other CO2 emitters are still finding that one more tree is cheaper than applying new technology to their businesses to reduce gross emissions, which, after all, is the whole point of this, right? The point is that the amount of stuff you pump into the atmosphere over time reduces. And yes, you can have trees as an offset for a period of time, but to rely entirely on it, I think, creates a distortion, and we're seeing that. And that's what I think farmers generally, not only just sheep and beef, but farmers generally feel that, you know, this is a construct that's not working. And you overlay all the other regulations the government's loaded up on farmers over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years or so, and bloody hell, the joy's been sucked out of it. That's what I hear.
Also, the Climate Change Commission has already come out and said too much is already happening in terms of planting forestry. It will certainly lock up and walk away forests. I think it needs to be reined in. And of course, we are the only country in the world that allows 100% forestry offsetting through an ETS system. So a national government will look at these settings and rein in forestry offsetting. Is that what you're saying?
Well, we're certainly going to look at these settings, and we're doing it as we speak. I'm not going to land, I can't, you know, give you a sense of where exactly we're going to land on it, but it's my view that the current model is not sustainable. I think there's also opportunity to look at how quickly you can widen the New Zealand ETS market to other sources of sequestration, which of course in turn creates those units, which takes us back to your first observation around on-farm sequestration. You've got fascinating and interesting developments, you know, in the seaweed space, mangroves. Then you've got international units themselves, which this government has shut the door on, but other countries use to just essentially create other options for their emitters beyond, as you say, you know, domestic forests, which are quite constrained in every other country in terms of being able to participate in their equivalent scheme. So, look, we've got a lot to think about. You know, it's, and we are doing that in a considered way. And, you know, that we will be able to share that with you in due course.
Okay. But essentially, you back the Hiwaki Kanoa proposal?
Yes, I do. Yep. And we do.
National
yes,
Party.
The spokesperson, and yes, we do as the National Party.
Yep.
But I think one of the things that has been lost in all of this is that, you know, what the sector proposal was very much a levy kind of framework, okay, as opposed to a tax framework, which these guys have thrown back at the sector. And, you know, I think most farmers would understand that, you know, something, we need to be doing something here. We clearly need more investment in potential solutions. We need the ability to be able to measure this on farm accurately, but also efficiently. It can't just be a very expensive, clunky system to add to everything else you've got to do. It's going to spend some, we need to spend some money there, but who's best to spend it? Is it government NPI trying to design this, or maybe more the private sector? But really the levy, you know, and I read something from Keith Woodford the other day, which I thought summed it up very well. It really, it should be designed and set at a price that helps fund all of that, and in time create the right incentives for farmers when the technology appears. And that's exactly where we are, right? This shouldn't be seen as an equivalent to an emissions trading scheme, which, of course, is designed to price carbon in a way to drive carbon out of industries that produce high carbon. This is, it's a different model. It's a partnership model. And I think the government, like I say, is completely stuffed it up.
Because there is some great things happening in the technology space, and it is coming when you look at the work that is happening at organisations like Ag Research around low-emitting sheep. There's genetic components there. There's work going into vaccines, which is going to reduce methane. That actually, they've got that working in a lab currently. It's just going to take some time before it'll work out in the field. So there is some amazing stuff happening there. And I feel like industry needs a bit more time to have all these things implemented in a fair and equitable way, rather than just smashing through policy that just seemingly has an endless tail to it. They're just stacked up one after the other.
And I think the sort of driver for that to me, I think, is a couple of things. One is that the government, I think, have a penchant for sweeping rhetoric and statements in this space. Think oil and gas, think nuclear-free moment. And now, you know, want to tout to the rest of the world, we're the first country that prices agricultural emissions. You know, it sounds nice. It's a good speech. But actually, what really counts is ensuring that there is a sector still there, thinking sheep and beef here in particular, to be able to apply that new technology when it arrives in the next sort of 3 to 10 years. And it won't all arrive at once. It'll, as you know, it'll be, you know, bits of new tech that will have to be applied. Some will work better than we think, some less so. The other sort of thing that comes through this for me is a view, again, expressed by you know, senior people in this government, that this is just a tactic by the sector to kick in action or kick action down the road and stall. And you hear it from those who don't like farming, who think agriculture's had its day. They always frame up this debate in the context of us as a sector, you know, not doing their part. And I just so fundamentally reject it. My background is in ag. I've seen the work that farmers have done, the money they have spent going on this journey, and there's zero acknowledgement for it. It's just, oh, well, you know, price of doing business. We won't even acknowledge you for it. And by the way, here's another ton of stuff we're going to load up on top of you. And no wonder farmers are getting bloody sick of it, frankly. And but so you've got to partner with the sector. And by all means, you and I should have, you know, a real robust conversation when there is technology available that can immediately reduce the methane emissions of the New Zealand agriculture sector and farmers aren't taking it up. Then you have a conversation, well, how do we best get that to happen? Is by contract conversation, is the message from the market strong enough? Do we have to make that price a bit more pointy? But you have that conversation then, Angus, you don't have it now.
Those interviews were recorded in November 2022, but many of the issues discussed remain unresolved. Since then, governments have changed, policy settings have shifted, and the economics of carbon has continued to influence land use decisions
across the country. The core questions raised back then are still very much alive today. Are emissions reductions still relevant? And if they are, how do we reduce emissions without undermining productive agriculture? How do we recognise the role of land use in both climate response and economic resilience? And how do we ensure policy signals don't unintentionally reshape rural communities faster than technology or markets can adapt? As we head toward the next election cycle, those questions are only likely to become more prominent. The detail may evolve, but the underlying tension between climate policy, land use, and the future of farming is still very much at the centre of the national conversation. Plenty more to come on this. That's all from me this week. Thank you for listening, and catch you next time.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.